started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I've killed my share of engines in a thousand different fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we want with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican.
And this is KBOO Portland. Time is 9:59 a.m. Coming up is Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with your host, Chris Andre. And you can help support KBOO Community Radio by donating your car, truck, motorcycle, ATV, motorhome, trailer, boat, or other type of vehicle. Transform your car into resources for unserved and underserved communities, free training, recording equipment, and great programming for all of KBOO's listeners. Donating your vehicle is easy. You just call 877-KBOO-123, 877-526-6123. Or check out kboo.fm/vehicle. And while you're at kboo.fm, if you're not already a member of the KBOO Foundation, you click on the little jar in the upper right-hand corner that says Donate Today, and you'll be on your way. Keep it locked right here for Air Cascadia, followed by Flashpoints, followed by the incomparable Radio Zine, where we remember former host of Art Focus, Julie Bernard. And we're experiencing some technical difficulties with intro music, so I'm just going to hand it right over to your host, Chris Andre.
Right. Okay. Boom, 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 et cetera. That would be the theme, anybody would like to take a crack at coming up with a new Air Cascadia theme, would love to hear from you. Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Friday, March 18th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We'll be speaking shortly with Paul Leukert. He is a PSU professor. He specializes, he's an expert actually, in atmospheric science and meteorology with active research in extreme participation events. He's worked with the Jet Propulsion Lab on evaluating climate models and published several papers on changing temperature extremes. What we still, after an abundance of evidence, after years now, even decades of personal experience, it still hasn't actually, people still have tumbled to the fact that everything is interconnected. So rising temperatures doesn't mean it's just getting warmer. No, it is getting warmer, and that produces a cascade of events. It basically is like the algorithm in chaos theory, where you take a very simple equation and you feed in variables, and that starts the system. And then you keep repeating the results. You feed the results back into the equation, and you over and over and over, you let the system run. Instead of effects petering out, diminishing, over time. The effects of very small changes in a system are greatly multiplied. It's a geometric rather than an arithmetic progression. And we are seeing that right now. We're living it. We'll be lucky if we survive it. It's our own creation. My guest today works in this field all the time and is able to look into the deep structure of what's shaping up around us. So, good morning. I am so pleased to have you with us, Paul. I'm going to mangle your last name, Loiketh. Paul Loiketh is joining us to talk about some of these effects that we're seeing. I, as well as doing the Cascadia, I farm. And over the last decade or so, I've watched while all predicators, everything that we've relied on, all of the barkers in the season, it doesn't matter anymore. It's out the window. I personally have no idea what I'm going to plant, when I'm going to plant it. I'm going to stick it in the ground and see what happens. As we used to say in the nursery business to departing customers, don't forget, green side up. Paul, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
So your the work that you're doing right now, these effects, I want to ask you about the speed of the changes and why that might be something to watch. Seems that things are happening faster. Why is that?
Well, the past couple of years have been particularly unusual in the western U.S., especially 2015. So if you look at the overall progression of trends in climate over, say, the past half a century or so, there hasn't really been an acceleration, although the past couple years have had a very unusual combination of what's likely rare, persistent, extreme weather patterns with the fingerprint of human influence on top of that. So if you look at a graph of temperature in Portland, for example, going back to 1940 when records have been kept at Portland Airport, there isn't a huge increase in warming over the past decade or so, but the past couple of years have been fairly unusual, and 2015 really stands out as the record here. So there's a combination here of unusual natural climate variability with a fingerprint of accelerating global warming on top of that.
So you've been looking at extremes in precipitation. The rain has come deluging down in parts of the country that didn't expect it, and not a deluge down much in parts of the country that were really counting on it. And it's not just this country. It's globally, the changes have been severe, and of course, with results that have been really deadly.
Yeah.
So, precipitation, we can't just look at this isolated from other factors. When we do see these kind of extreme precipitation events, and there's a ton of rain, what other, no pun intended, downstream effects? Because one chaotician talks about sensitive dependence on initial conditions. Mm-hmm. Given the conditions, the kind of patterns that we are familiar with, and what these changes are doing to that pattern, where else in the environment do we see the results of extreme rain?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and you're right. It certainly has been extreme. The winter of 2015, and meteorologists define winter as December, January, and February, was the wettest winter on record in the Portland area, which is probably no surprise to those of us who've just lived through it. And it continues into March now. It's already surpassing March's monthly average rainfall this early in the month. Global warming can affect precipitation in a couple of ways. There's sort of two main ways. you could impact the weather patterns themselves. So that could act to bring more precipitation to a place that doesn't typically get it, or it could do the opposite and bring less precipitation to a place that typically gets it. Also, by adding more heat to the atmosphere, a warmer atmosphere can hold more water vapor, so you can have heavier precipitation in a warmer atmosphere when it does rain. The winter that we've had sort of fits into that paradigm of heavier precipitation when it does rain, although it's important to not look at one particular season in isolation and draw any major conclusions about whether it's a global warming impact or just an unusual season. However, it is consistent with the understanding of the physics of the atmosphere that we have, that a warmer atmosphere and a warmer Pacific Ocean, too, could contribute to heavier precipitation when we do get that. As far as downstream effects of changes in precipitation, here in the Northwest, we'd have quite a few of those. So we rely primarily on seasonal precipitation for our agriculture and for drinking water and other water resources. So that's wintertime precipitation only. So if the amount or timing of winter precipitation changes, that could affect runoff, that could affect reservoirs and water resources, that could also affect flooding if we have too much of it. Also, the type of precipitation we get is very important because we rely a lot on snowpack for our summer water resources. So when it doesn't rain in the summer, snowmelt from our mountains fills our reservoirs. And at least last winter, not as much this particular winter, most of the precipitation in the mountains fell as rain. So we didn't have that snowpack to give us that summer reservoir of water, which is a particularly troubling situation when we've been relying on snowpack for so long. So I think that's what sort of the important factors in the Northwest. And what we saw this winter was consistent with some of those anticipated changes, but also a part of, again, of a very sort of a rare sequence of natural climate variability and weather variability events as well that was on top of that.
What about effects on animals, plants? I know that when farmers get a tremendous amount of rain right around harvest time, cherries will split. And, of course, a tremendous amount of moisture encourages mildews and that sort of those types of problems. Rust and all kinds of pest issues in fruit orchards. It also can change, radically change what we are able to grow in certain areas. It's difficult for farmers to keep up with some of these changes. Diseases with farm animals too. A great deal of moisture, a great deal of rain promote diseases that we haven't seen before, or at least not to the degree to which we're seeing it now. Can you talk just briefly before we let you go, some of the other perhaps unforeseen effects that this extreme precipitation is causing or that we want to be on the lookout for?
Sure. Well, the way that we farm, the way that we live, and the way the ecosystem exists is all sort of based on a climate that may not be as reliably consistent as it used to be. So with winters that may be warmer with heavier rain, for example, and less snow, our systems aren't adapted to dealing with that type of climate. So adaptation and keeping up with changes, I think, is sort of a necessity, right, when looking at these potential changes into the future. As far as specific impacts go, to agriculture and to other resources, that's, for me, a little bit difficult to answer. There's probably people who are a little bit more informed on the actual agricultural impacts. But as far as things like water resources and the ecosystems and our agricultural practices, again, they're based on a climate sort of the past that may not be exactly what we can rely on now going into the future. And so understanding the anticipated changes and the range of changes is really important to being able to adapt to that. And there's a lot of work being done to refine those projections and to best understand how the changes are going to be manifested and how natural variability will then be superimposed on that to bring particularly extreme years like we've seen in 2015 and 2016.
Thank you so much for that. Another, well, one final thing occurs to me is that the one thing I do know is that water plus warmth equals cholera, something that don't want to look forward to that. My guest, of course, has been Paul Leukes. He is a Portland State professor of geography and particularly an expert in atmospheric science and meteorology, working in the area of extreme participation events. And whether it's on right now, whether we actually see outside our doors, that is what we are, in fact, talking about when we sit in here. Thanks again, Paul. Weather, by the way, for today, mostly sunny. Highs near 62, east wind, big wind today, 18 miles per hour, gusting up to 26 tonight. A bit overcast, lows around 44. And east wind, 7 to 16, gusting up as high as around 25 miles per hour. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs near 62, winds tapering off. I would like to just give you a quick preview. We're going to be talking next week with Chip Givens. He's an expert on communication management units. These are a new type of prison. Information does not get in. Information does not get out. They're a little bit worried about some of the writings that are coming out of prisons today. God forbid that the people